This is Deborah Friedis, and I am sitting in a cafe in Tel Aviv with Niv Schoenfeld and with Oren Lohr. Why don't you say hi to our audience, Oren?
Hi, Deborah.
And this is Niv.
Hello.
Fantastic. So I got to see their work, Dua Team, earlier, and have several questions for them. I want to start at the beginning, and I'm curious to know about your training, how you started moving, how you started directing. I know you come more from the theater world, so let me just put that basic question out there. Niv, why don't we start with you, and can you tell me how you started dancing?
I started as a dancer working with Liat Dror and Nir Ben-Gal. They are two Israeli choreographers now working in the desert in Mitzpe Ramon. And I danced with their company for 6 years, and then I started creating my own work, working with Ensemble Batsheva, Kibbutz Dance Company, Musa Dance Theater Company, and I also danced and participated as an actor in a few projects, and that's it. Oren?
I studied at the Tel Aviv University, acting in drama theater, 4 years, doing some fringe stuff, some children's shows, and for the last 3 years I've been working with Niv on the dance theater productions.
I think I use movement, I see movement as something that is the ability of a person to express himself. Anything in that sense is legitimate, and any style of movement, if it's miming or if it's folk dancing or if it's modern or classical, is relevant. And I try to take all these elements, and I think Oren is also, try to take also... like gestures of like the human body, and all of these are combining into one language that is our language and is the piece itself. Every piece has its own language, and in general I think that if you look at all our pieces you can come with an idea of the language, which is more of a combination of the human ability of what is happening with the body.
I can really see that in your work. I'll leave that at that for right now and move on to questions, but I think in large part that sensibility that you have is what has attracted me to your work, and you just put it better than I could have, so thank you for that.
What's happening between us, I think, is sort of a fusion, or you know, a combination of movement, but still I think for us it's very important, the story. Now, the story is not, you know, this and this happened and this happened. It's not that. It's not a linear kind of narrative. It's more the story of the person, the story of the people, you know, the human being inside there. Not just movements in space and checking, you know, checking how a movement can influence space and time. And not only that, I mean, of course it exists. Of course it exists. But still, for me, as somebody who's coming from a more concrete kind of art, I have to see the person in there. If I don't see it, something is blank. You know, it almost never goes deeper for me, you know, if I don't see a person there. And I think this is where we're coming from, you know, in the point of view.
I think the movement for us happens, it needs a reason. It doesn't really, if you can tell a story afterwards of what happened, but in order for the dancer or the person on stage to know what he's doing every second, every look, every movement of the finger is relevant and is important. It's not always even a part of the choreography, it can be new, but it came for a reason. There was a reason for something that happened, then it's relevant. And it's and also in the studio, I think, and it's come to how you teach, and if you have a frame of movements, which is a sentence of A, B, C, D movements, and you take it as a frame of movement and trying to find the freedom of how you as a person or as a dancer or as a performer trying to fill this up, this is for me what is interesting, and to find the combination of all the performers, of all of the stage persons involved.
So for me, for instance, I have only taken one acting class in my life, but some of what you both said made me wonder if your dancers are also trained as actors, or do you give them exercises to, or Niamh, do you give them exercises to do that bring in more traditional or experimental acting techniques as opposed to dancing techniques? So who wants to talk to that first? Oren.
We don't do any, let's say, specific coaching, you know, that if, involves, I don't know, text reading or, you know, behavior even. But we do work in the studio mostly after Niamh has built some kind of structure or sentence movements. And then when I enter the studio and I see what he's done there and I get some idea or some kind of feel, you know, of what's happening in the scene, sometimes it's not even because of his intention, it's just there. And then we start, and then we try to mold the scene into something more coherent. And still, we leave a space for wandering to different kind of emotions, you know, every spectator with his own kind of concepts. But I just want to say about the acting part, that I find it's a misfortune that dancers do not take more acting classes, because for me it is so important to see the face, to see the expression beyond the body. And I tell you one thing, we did one of the shows that we did of Jerome in the North, I think. There was a technician, a lighting technician, that started building the cues for the lights. And then I said, hey, I was looking at the stage and said, I don't see their faces. But he said, but it's dance. This is dance. Why do you need faces? And I said, if I don't see faces, this doesn't exist for me. Of course, some people it exists fully for them, but I need to see the expressions. I need to see the eyes. I need to see how the body and the movement and the information of the scene, how it expresses itself through his eyes, his, hers. I need to see this.
Let's backtrack a tiny bit. You said that you met first on a personal level. So what made you take the jump to start moving from conversations about issues of theater, dance, performance, art, into making work together? Niamh?
Hey, I started working on Kvarians. It's in the duets. The piece, it's the male duet there that usually used. It's on the beginning. It was men and women duet, and I did the structure and it was already like standing and the music and everything. And I wanted to. I really needed to add humor in it. I felt it's very heavy, and I wanted to find a kind of like in life. I think if you don't have some kind of smile or something, then it's heavy, and that's an additional part of it. I called Oren in order to do that, to look for points that we can add, and Oren started, we started talking about also the dramaturgy, and started changing, like editing things a little bit different and stuff, and later on, the next piece we did already, dramaturgy and concept development, because we already started talking about it. And next piece was Girona, which Oren was on stage, and I wasn't because I was injured. And then the last piece, duets, we were dancing, both of us were on stage, and I mean, not dancing together, but
I think what you might find interesting, like in the way we work, sometimes, let's say if it's a full evening of 40 minutes, or I don't know, and there are so and so many scenes, some of them developed through. So I think some of the scenes we were working in a way that Niamh went to the studio and started collecting kind of movement sentences and physical issues between the dancers, and then I came to the studio and I saw it, and we started discussing it, and I suggested a few stuff, and some other scenes were we started from talking about them at home, what kind of idea we want for this next thing, which is kind of, this is a theatrical element, I think, in many ways, what kind of What kind of relationship do you think this show needs at this point? And for instance, in Girona, we have we wanted to examine the idea of a male drag queen, a transsexual, and we wanted to have also a mother and a child in there and start examining the relationship through movement, you know, between these two elements. With this concept, we started on the same level, parallel. These two things, you know, the movement on one thing, and on the other thing, starting to create and mold the ideas, and then going to the studio and trying to project them on, you know, to see how this reflects on the cast. So sometimes it's the idea that was the beginning, and sometimes the movement.
I want to add that the image is very important for us in our work. Also, the props and the image as a, not only a dancer in general and a person in general, but this person can be something. I mean, it can has kind of a character in it, and in that, you know, with that to create a body language of the character, and also using kind of a balance between the image and the image or the character and the language of movement that this character has, and the way that it moves is the dance and creates the piece.
Just quickly for clarification, the piece, Oren, that you were talking about with the drag queen,
That piece is called Girona, and as a continuation to what Niv just said, I think I totally agree, and I think it's not just when I said story. No, the story that matters, I meant not of any person, but to see a specific person with this and this characteristics, and which is a theatrical element, you know. And then I think when you see someone who's specific and not anybody, you can identify. You don't have to see yourself in him, but you can feel empathy, you know, and you care about him. In a way, you care about him, even if it's, you know, dance and movement. It still has to stand with the visual standards and everything, and movements and stuff. But you see something that you care about. I mean, the two boys in duets, I think, when I see them, whenever I get to the last valse that they do, after you've seen them for about 15 minutes and the way they behave and their personalities, you care. You know, I when I see them, you know, and I see it so many times, you know, I'm melting. I mean, and that's what I think for me personally, that's what it does. When you see the stage and you develop more sensitivity towards this person and in general.
Just to add to that, from a viewer's standpoint, I think I remember seeing Duetim back in October, so within the first month that I was here. And I remember being quite impressed. Well, I was very taken with the work, but I very clearly remember the audience reaction to the work. And it struck me that this was one of the few times in recent memory where I heard audience members laughing at certain times, and I heard other noises, maybe somewhat more subtle, but other emotions coming out in the audience as a response to these very particular characters who you do see develop over a period of time. And that's rare, and it's rare as well to have both those lighter moments and those emotions that are kind of on the sadder or more poignant edges of the emotional spectrum. And so I was quite struck, and I remember also at the end just the applause that came forth. It was from a very deep place, and it wasn't about virtuosity, but I felt it was from a real kind of caring. And that's different. It's a lot of.
Yeah, I feel that. First of all, it's making me very happy to hear you. You know, what you just said, because I think that if this magical thing happens, that the person who goes into the auditorium to see the show has changed, even in tiny, tiny little bit. You know, is a little bit more sensitive because it touched him, and who did this to, I don't know, 30 people out of 100, then. We're, you know, very lucky to have been able to give him the opportunity to do that.
When did you start working together? Approximately what year was it?
I think 1904 of
Yeah.
No, 1904.
Sure,
no, 2004.
That was maybe a moment of comedy here. I can see where the humor comes from. And the real answer, because you are not a 100 and some odd years old, is...
Ah, no? Okay.
I took my horse and cavalier and I went to his place.
2004, I think, yeah.
Okay, so about 2004 right now. It's the beginning of 2008. Excellent. So the question about Do a Team. So you had started working on covariance. And then when did it come together as those three pieces together? You with the interlude that you performed in, Oren, and then the Life and Death, which I saw you perform in. When did that become a full evening?
We wanted, Niamh suggested that, I mean, we spoke after Girona has been running already for almost a year. Niamh has suggested that we take an evening of only duets, because he was working on a current duet with Sivan Gutholz, the On Life and Death, and we were working on it together, actually, festival in A Matter of Life and Death. And he said, okay, we have this duet, we have covariance, and for a long time he's been wanting to make it a two-male duet. And I said, okay, so we have two heavy, strong duets. And then I suggested, okay, maybe we should have some comic links in them, you know, first of all, to lighten it up, and then to make a sec, you know, like to enclose a circle of 2-2-2 and make something comic out of it. I mean, we see two strong, heavy, into a lot of relationship stuff. And they said, okay, maybe we should show some of the lighter side the courting stage. And I think the idea, what you saw, the idea came to me when I saw there is a BBC series called The Wonderful World or something like that. It's a nature series. And there were two birds. We just saw it, and there was a male bird on a branch of a tree, something, and then the female jumped over on the branch, and suddenly he saw her, and he opened this huge thing with wings, you know, and it was with strikes of blue and beautiful, and said, okay, this is courting, and we take this to the stage. And then we started, you know, building the small interludes in between, and we think it's very cute because this couple doesn't have as much time as the two other couples, you know, linearly. So, but still, I think the audience still waits to see, when you see them once again, he knows, we will probably see them again. And then you start caring for them also, even though they're just comic, you know, and they're not more into heavy stuff. So the beginning was Niamh's idea, and then we started collaborating and bringing it together to a full evening.
Thank you, Oren. I have had the benefit of seeing Do a Team, and I will eventually have the pleasure of seeing Girona. But I'm sure that listeners outside of Israel might be curious if there's something else you can tell us about Girona. What were some of the images or characters or stories in Girona? Niamh?
Girona is a world of women, and there is one man, one drag queen, which is wanna be a woman. I mean, somehow a mother and a daughter. I mean, it's different because we heard a lot of interpretations. So for me, it's a mother and a daughter, but the interpretations are open. And two women. That one is more sexy, more young, more tempting, and one is more heavy, a little bit more, like, kind of want to have a child a little bit, and she has also a kind of a dialogue with the other woman there. They have a strong dialogue, and the man is during all the performance is looking at this world. I mean, it's like no character is leaving the stage besides the drag queen that is changing costumes, but everybody's on stage all the time. So even if they are sitting or watching, or they're on stage, it was important for me as a decision. Nobody's leaving the stage, like inside your head or something.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much describes it in a very small nutshell. Yeah, We started with a drag show because we wanted something very extravagant and colorful, sort of Almodovar thing. And then when we took the image and we started working with it, we dwelled deeper, you know, at least that's what we feel. And we saw that the drag queen, you know, is as feminine as he might be, or as woman as he would present himself, the ability to bear a child will never be his. That we will, I mean, like the total feminine experience you will not be able to get. And from that point on, we saw the sadness in that personality also. And besides the, you know, the glamour and the show and the bottom line for him is, not, you know, when he leaves the stage and the lights are down, you know, he comes back to this conflict of what he wants to be and what he really is. So we started, you know, taking this for a while.
To be precise, I don't know if a drag queen wants to be a woman. It's not. It's more of a conflict between of transvestites or some or men who wants to be a woman. But the question is not about the fact the life of a drag queen, but about the gender issue of a person, which feels that he could have another option, or it's a philosophical question, actually.
But back to the that idea that a man will never be able to bear a child, even if he went through all the surgeries of, you know, actually changing, it makes me think of the piece in Duetim. What is the exact title?
A matter of
life and death. Is it connected in any way? Can you say what it is that you wear in that?
It starts with me wearing pregnancy belly and like fake breasts and the belly of a pregnancy, and I wear it on black clothes, and it's an absurd like element, or I don't know if it's an absurd or avant-garde, or like it's clearly not meant to be there. But this question of pregnancy between a couple is raising lots of questions. What are the roles? What does this pregnancy does to any one of the couple? And she wears it eventually, and she's wearing it also kind of naked or body colored, and it's more suitable for, and it's more natural for her, but it's still not necessarily acceptable by her. And I think we are dealing a lot of time with these issues of pregnancy and child, and because we are having this question about ourselves, I think
one of the things that we thought about on A Matter of Life and Death was the fact that sometimes many couples bring pregnancy as a solution to their problems in the marriage or in the relationship. So, you know, it's like the magical thing that would solve all the problems. There is a child, then you have to deal with this child, and then all the problems, the personal problems set aside. You know, I'm not coming right now to judge if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Of course, I have my own idea about it, but the fact that it happens, I know that, you know, we know that it's happening, we speak to many couples, people who are feeling that they are on the edge of nothing or on the edge of breakup, you know, so they want to get pregnant so it will revive or rejuvenate their relationship. And then 3 years later they divorce, you know, and there is a child, 3-year-old child, you know, unfortunately. So this is one of the options also for understanding the piece.
One more thing, the movement in A Matter of Life and Death is less connected, less linked between one another. It's more like two bodies in space related energetically, because they have the relation is less, I mean, it's more far away from one another, and they have this and the feeling of hysteria and stuff inside. That was a lot of the search in the movement, and because of that, as I told you, it's changed a lot from the premiere to now, because we tried to make the situation more acoustic, more extreme, and finding the all the time it's burning and it's feeling of a necessity, and not falling to the music. It's Brahms music, clarinet, quintet, first chapter, very, very romantical, very classical, very fluent, and to find the contrast of this energetic thing.
Thank you. You're both painting such a wonderful picture and sound, I think, of the work, which is great. It's difficult sometimes to just be using words to deal with dance. And I think it's really helpful to have these images and to also know a little, you know, to have that thought about, oh, the music is a very classical thing. What is the music like for Girona?
Totally different. It's a pop music, it's pop songs, it's like a song album. It's one song after the other in a row. It's an 8 songs in spite of 2 small pieces of John Zorn. But it's all kind of popular songs, human voices, which... Marlon Dietrich, Rav Alberstein, who's there else? Lots of people, and I mean, it's creating a very different world, because duets is very classical. It's Chopin, Brahms, and Shostakovich, which are very differently oriented.
Is there anything that you would really want someone to know about your work?
I think for me, of course, I would probably assume that it's different, maybe for Niv, but for me, I want to produce on stage for the people who watch this what I want to be experiencing when I go to see another show. I want to cry a little, I want to laugh a little, I want to leave the auditorium a little slightly different than I went into it, to see some sensitive side of something that I haven't seen before, or that I've seen before but now it's more stressed. I want to feel. It probably sounds a little bit trite and cliche, but that is for me.
For me, I can agree with what Oren said, but I want to say that any viewer's opinion of what he sees that I create or Oren creates or on stage is legitimate.
Do you work with the same dancers all the time? Is it a pickup company? How does it work structurally?
We're tending to work with the same people because you know the people, and it's more the deepest you get to know them, you can better communicate, and it's about feeling nice with the people. You feel nice, you won't work again. And we are trying to make some kind of people that we work with because they know our language and we know them as the persons. And
I think we just were in love with our dancers. We think they're such wonderful personalities, and if it fits, you know, we try to really to incorporate them into the new projects.
Do you see your work as influenced by any particular artist?
No, I wouldn't have a lot to say because, you know, we're in the dance world and I'm pretty new at this because of... I tell you what, I think one event that was amazing for me was when I saw DV8. They performed in Israel quite a few years ago. DV8 are, they call themselves Physical Theater. They are situated in England, I think in London.
Lloyd Newson.
He's the choreographer. Yeah. And they had a piece called Enter Achilles, something like that. And a friend grabbed me to see it, and I couldn't speak for a week. It was amazing. And it was, I think, it proved to me that dance can be communicative. And then you can feel something when you see dance. It's not just figures moving and that's it. There was a story, but still they were moving all the time. You know, it was not textual. For me, it was, I couldn't recover for a while. So and I still remember these images, you know, after so many years. And Niv showed me a few pieces in the video of Pina Bausch, which were some of it were amazing for me. I mean, so you know, you can see the theatrical element in me, you know. So and I also saw what DVDs of Niv that he danced with Neil Bengal and Leah Dror, some of their work. Ma? And they were amazing. From the theater, I think the Israeli Chanoch Levin is a very famous Israeli. He's, I mean, rest in peace, he's dead already, but he was one of the best Israeli playwrights ever. And his view of the person, the people, you know, the existence, but he did it always in a, you know, in a laughable way, but not laughable, you know, that you can laugh on it, you know, but sometimes on the lighter side, sometimes on the downer side, on sadder, lighter. And he was, for me, he was a poet, you know, he wasn't exactly a writer, he was a poet. And of course, the wonderful Greeks like Euripides, and that they really thought and believed that the stage is meant for drama to happen and not for mediocre things to happen. People who come to the stage demand drama. They want to see, you know, one of my teachers in theater said, the stage is where you can release violence with permission and with control. This is a place that you can release violence with control and permission. And that's what people want to see. For me, I know that's what I like to see. And of course, when it's in dance, it's a little bit different. But I think some of these elements are what matter to me and influence me in my work.
From the dance world, I can point, Pina Bausch was a great influence for me. I love her pieces. I saw, I mean, live 5 of them, and I love Ohad Naharin. He was very, very interesting for me.
Kind of big theoretical questions, which I am trying to wade through for my own research. And again, I'm still learning how to ask. I'm like the kid in the Haggadah, what is it, the third child or the fourth child, who doesn't know how to ask, right? But, you know, looks up and wants some sort of explanation.
I think the one who doesn't know how to ask is the one that learns the best thing.
He's on the right track. Oh, good. Well, the funny thing, actually, I didn't know I was going to go in a kind of... not as well religious Jewish cultural way on that, but that's sort of these questions that I have, which is, do you think there's anything particularly Israeli about your work, and if so, what?
I think yes, that the fusion that they spoke about at the beginning of any movement is possible is kind of coming from the Israel culture that is very pastiche, is very like kind of a collage of cultures, and creating a new culture, a young culture out of nothing. And also our body movement is any movement, any style is legitimate, and it's all the person is making it his own, is the language, and that is, I mean, for me, what the Israeli culture means, because it's very young and it's very developing, and what a person does with the movement becoming his own.
I was thinking if I have anything to I'm trying to phrase an answer. I don't think, you know, maybe somebody from the outside can say there is. I certainly can't say that there is something Israeli in what I, you know, create, because I never think of Israel, but more of relationship. And I think maybe if you live inside it, you don't feel that. I mean, like, you can't spot and say, ah, this is Israeli and this is what, you know, but you're just part of it. I think, and if I would say, you know, that I feel that relationships or sensitivity towards one another are cast aside today. I'm not sure that it's just an Israeli, you know, trend. I think it's probably cosmopolitan. So in that sense, I never think of something which is Israeli. I'm not very nationalistic in that idea at all. And I see the, you know, the small person, the, you know, one of my again, one phrase that somebody told me once when we worked on a play, she said that you have to remember that when you portray a character in the theater, you give a voice to somebody who can never really speak. You know, he's out there, he's with us all the time, everywhere, you know, but he doesn't have a stage. And you have to be his messenger, in a way. So I always remember this, because this is what's interesting, because I think we're all, in a way, feel that, you know, we're also this small person. So I'm more into the interactions, relationships. I don't think there is something Israeli. I wouldn't define it like that.
It's more of a humanistic, just, yeah. It's interesting though. I mean, you speak kind of to the movement aspect of it.
Yeah,
and Oren, you're talking more about the compositional, choreographic, right, dramatic aspect of it. So in the physical sense, and this is why I've been asking all these questions, I think, about physicality in part, is because, yeah, and again, I'm still not sure how to phrase it, but I do feel like there's something a little different about it and the physicality, or right? And of course, I think since I'm coming in as an outsider, you know, people are asking me, okay, so what's Israeli about Israeli dance? And that's certainly a question that I kind of has as a broad overview. So it's interesting to kind of get this dual aspect, like yes and no, it is and it isn't, and this is a level on which it is, and this is a level on which, I mean, we're all people, and you are people who are particularly interested in dealing with human relationships, and that, I mean, you could be in any other country and also be doing, it's not that you're Israeli and therefore you're interested in interpersonal relationships.